ओम ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Welcome, everyone. So nice to see. Many of you have come from long distances away, visiting here for the first time. Such a pleasure to have you. Thank you. And all of you who are joining online, we welcome you to tonight's broadcast. We'll be talking about killing procrastination and embracing discipline for a happier and healthier life. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kasyad yatiti siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashchin mamveti tatvataha. That out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. And there are other proclamations like this throughout the Bhagavatam about how rare it is for a soul to take real interest in spiritual life. And the Shastra says that the moment that one has this inclination to take advantage of the human form of life, that one has an inkling that there's a possibility of actually making advancement, that one should take advantage of it as soon as possible. Rupa Goswami, in a famous verse, says, Krishna bhakti ras bhavito mati kriyatam yadi krito pilabhyate tatalolyam api mulyam ekalam janmakoti sukriter na labhyate. That there's only one price that one can pay for bhakti, to get devotion to Krishna, and that is one's intense greed for it. And the word is lalyam. And then Rupa Goswami says that if you know that it's available in the marketplace, that you should go there immediately. Don't hesitate. Go and take it as quickly as possible. Prahlad Maharaj, who is a 5-year-old boy, and in his prayers says, Komara achret pragno dharmam bhagavatan niha dulabham manasan janma tarapya dhruvam artadam. That because this life is very flickering, it can be over at any time. He said, from the very tender age of childhood, one should take to spiritual life. From the age of 5 years old, or sooner. Prahlad Maharaj took to spiritual life from the time he was in the womb of his mother. Oftentimes people say, I'll wait till later. In time, when I'm young, this is for enjoyment. But Prahlad Maharaj says that when you're a baby, you waste time crawling around, putting things in your mouth, drooling on everybody, crying, trying to get attention. Then when you're a young boy or girl, you want to play games. Then he said when you're a young adult, there's an attraction for the opposite sex, and one's mind becomes swept away by that. Then one has to enter into the world of work, and one's thinking about professional career, and in this way, another 20, 30 years go down the drain. And then comes old age, and that's the time many people, even in materialistic life, they say, I'll retire. But actually, when retirement comes, there are so many anomalies due to having a material body that one can hardly even concentrate or retire properly. In fact, Satyadev Prabhu once told me that in America, practically everyone dies broke because they save up all their money their whole life thinking that they're going to have a beautiful retirement, and then they get ill. And then while they're ill, they can't pay for their insurance premiums. And when you can't pay for your insurance premiums, then you have to pay all the money you saved for retirement until the free insurance from the United States kicks in. And that's after you've lost everything. So he said everyone dies broke. And there's an idea that I'll put off spiritual life until later, and then I'll become serious. But all the Shastras say, don't procrastinate. You don't put off your spiritual life for a moment once you have an understanding how important it is. It's not comparable to anything else. Janma Sukritir Nalabhyate. Even Rupa Goswami says it's even pious activities, if you perform for many lifetimes, you won't get Krishna Bhakti. But devotional service is so important that one should not procrastinate it, even for a second. So, one of the symptoms of an advanced devotee is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami in the teachings that are approximately in the Madhya Lila, starting from the 19th chapter up to the 22nd. And there he gives a list of symptoms of someone who's become advanced in spiritual life. One of those symptoms is avyarta kalatvam, which means that a person who's developing bhava, or an overwhelming feeling for Krishna, won't waste even a second and wants to utilize every moment possible to be engaged in Krishna service. Any comments so far? Any one thing that you heard so far that stuck in your mind? And the microphones will come bounding out from somewhere. They're here available. One thing that you heard so far that piqued your interest or stuck in your mind. And by the way, we have a call-in number. Shraddha will read it out to you. It's on the screen also, right, Ramananda? Okay. Go right ahead.
The calling number is 650-245-7018. Once again, 650-245-7018. And so Maharaj, it's always the avartha kya kalatvam, whenever you use it, you know, that impresses me a lot. Because in the past, like 5-6 months, my life has become so much more busy. And I've started, you know, interviewing things, like do a little bit of temple work, do a little bit of office work. And so I was just thinking today morning that you know, even if you waste 1 second or 2 seconds here and there, then, you know, you have a backlog of something going up. So avartha kalatvam is very, I think that always impresses me a lot. But that part, so it stuck out again.
You're feeling that you have so much service that you can't imagine how you'd waste a moment anyway?
That is true too. Yeah.
Even if you wanted to. That's one way to do it, to become so absorbed. Krishna's mercy if you're given so much service. And with that, it's what it makes of you to actually take on so much service, that you have to become a... You have to fortify yourself in many different ways in order to take on so much service. And that means that you're improving. What else? What else did you hear so far that stuck in your mind?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You know, when you speak, the things become very simple and clear, but then you regret, you know, how much time you have wasted. It looks like, okay, I did a great job, but end of the day, it is a waste. So I think it's better when you speak, then things become more clear. it goes deeper in the mind, but the only thing is the Maya outside. When you move out, you still, but I'm glad you're here back. So then, okay, now I feel good.
Okay, I feel good too. Just the sentiment you brought up is very nice also, that I've wasted so much time. And we hear this often in the prayers of the Vaishnavas, that I've wasted so many lifetimes. I've wasted this lifetime. Bhaktivinoda Thakur brings it up in his prayer, Aramara Jivana, where he's lamenting that he's practically saying, I wasted my whole life. And now what can I do? Practically nothing. I'm in my old age. I'm invalid practically, and I can't even serve you now. So definitely this awareness of how precious the time we have is, and the awareness that of the opportunity that we have. This is a revelation when one awakens to the fact that I'm in a very precarious situation. Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala, says the poet in Bengali, Jayadev Goswami, that there's a way in which at any moment I can slip off, just like a drop of water on a lotus flower can roll off. So my death is imminent, even though I don't know it. And still I've wasted so much time. And this opportunity is described in the Shastra, Labvam Sudulabhamidam Bahusam Bhavante. Manusha Martana Manityam Apihadira. Shastra says that it's extremely rare to get a human form of life. And even though it's so rare that even though it's a temporary life, it's very valuable. That even in its one lifetime, if one takes full advantage of it, one can attain the perfection of life. Yes, what else? Any other points that you heard so far? Yes, please.
That we generally push devotional service towards to a later, that I'll do it later when I retire, when I'm old. And then you said that when old age actually comes, then most of us die broke. And we think that we will be able to do things in old age, but it doesn't happen. So it's better to start as soon as, you know, when you're young.
Yeah, don't take for granted that you'll be able to.
Yeah, do that.
Or even in the daytime, you might think, I'll procrastinate doing some important service, I'll put it off to later, and then you get a phone call that you have to go tow somebody's car or something like that, that, you know, you lose the opportunity. So you should, even in the unit of one day, you should take advantage of each unit of one day to make sure that you make it complete through your sadhana. Don't procrastinate. Yes.
Rajit, reminds me about you. You gave the example of your sister. That's kind of when you talk about the retirement, always.
That's right. The same day, she was a full professor at Bellingham University, spent her whole life in academics, and then the day she got her retirement notice, well, she knew she was retiring, but anyway, she got the official retirement, is the same day that she got a call back from the doctor from a biopsy saying that she had 3 months to live because she had this cancer of the pancreas. Same day, she called and told me. I said, how are you doing? Not so good. I have some news. I'm retiring, but I thought maybe I'd be able to enjoy it, but now I'm going to have to pack up and go. So those things can happen at any time, and the Shastra warns us, don't think otherwise. In fact, in the story in the Mahabharata in which Maharaj Yudhishthir meets Yamaraj, who asks him various questions. Among the questions are, what is the most amazing thing in this world? And he said, living entities are being delivered into the jaws of death at every moment, and everyone else thinks I won't die. Or if I do, it'll be in millions of years from now. So, a few practical points. This word procrastinate means to delay or postpone action, putting off doing something. There's a noun which is a procrastinator. Procrastinatory is the adjective. It comes from the Latin procrastinat, deferred until tomorrow, from the verb procrastinare, pro forward procrastinus, belonging to tomorrow, from crass, tomorrow. So, a few very practical things about getting things done and making sure that we don't miss anything. And that is to have clarity about what we're doing. And it's important to think on paper, that if you write down what you're doing and why you're doing it, you clearly think things out, and you work from a list. There's an old saying, what gets written gets done. And we find that people who don't write things down, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, who just say, I'll remember it later, tend to not remember them later. But if you get in the habit of writing down what you need to do and making a list and making it clear, then what gets written gets done. Otherwise, it can slip away. A second point of clarity is to decide exactly what you want and then write it down. This is a means of the simplest definition of goal setting, which is decide what you want and then write it down. Oftentimes, those thoughts move around in one's head perpetually and we don't catch them and actually write them down. But once they're written, what gets written gets done. And then set a deadline or a goal, because goals are very potent. I notice oftentimes in meetings that I attend where there are devotees coming together to work on a project or an initiative, I can tell if there's not a point at which, well, first of all, if it doesn't get written down during the meeting, there always has to be somebody taking the minutes, meticulously writing down all the thoughts and ideas. And if there's not, then 95% of the meeting is wasted. At least 95%, maybe 99%. You don't catch it. And then, if you don't make any action item or deadline during the meeting, that is, you don't make a very specific directive about what needs to be done and who's going to do it and what time it's going to be finished, then it's also almost a complete waste of time. And I've been in groups where you'll meet 1 year and then the next year come back and they're still talking about the same thing, because there was no point at which someone said, this is who's going to do it and this is the date it's going to be done. So being precise in setting a deadline or a goal and making sure you know who's going to do it makes all the difference in the world. So also in the art of killing procrastination, having clear goals and writing them down is very helpful. They help to motivate us and they help to keep clear what the next steps are that we have to make. So, clarifying further, if you make a goal, then make a list of everything that you can think of that you're going to have to do to achieve your goal. And then organize your list into a plan, and then take action on your plan immediately. And finally, resolve to do something every single day that moves you forward towards your major goal. So, it takes some time to think about what we're doing, but if you just get a legal pad and a pen, and you sit down for an hour, and you brainstorm with yourself about all the things that you need to do, and you write them down, just get everything out onto the pad. And maybe even when you walk away, if you're doing something else, and then there's a thought that comes around to you that I need to do this or that, then you go back and you write it down. First thing is get it all out of the mental system and onto the written page so that it's on a list. And then go through and clarify it and prioritize what are the most important things. This is deliberately organizing one's thoughts and times so that you can complete the goal and keep moving forward without missing anything. Any thoughts or comments so far? Or questions? Yes, back the mic.
Hi, Krishna. In regards to writing things down, often my desk at home has tons of little notepads, the sticky notes all over with my notes that I take from clients. And I know that if I don't do that, it's in one ear, out the other, and completely gone. So it does come in handy to do that.
Nice. So you put them where you can see them.
It's right in front of me. And then I move them as they're completed. So the left-hand side is the complete column, and they go this way.
Thank you. Anybody else write things down? Yes? Want to tell us?
Same thing, like, you know, if you don't write it down, it just slips your mind. You might think, and off late, a lot is slipping my my attention. I was also looking at the reflecting on the definition of procrastinate, where it said that you put it off till tomorrow. And that's the part that I was thinking is very dangerous, because it looks like it's just till tomorrow. But then tomorrow, it's again tomorrow. So little by little, it, you know, you can procrastinate for months and years and so on, but just a little tomorrow.
Yeah, and on the other side, if you have a plan and you're able to do a little bit every day towards the plan, even if it's a small, make some small progress, then it gives you momentum, and it's amazing how much you can do. As Prabhupada used to say, drops a day wear the stone away. Shruti Kirti Prabhu was telling us, I think was him, when we were in Mayapur, about he was explaining how he wrote his books. He said, every day I try to write something. He said, even if it's one line, I write something. And then he said, drops a day wear the stone away. And then he pointed to all the books behind him that were already published, and he said, and see the result. So a very practical way that if you clarify first what is your goals and what's important to you, and you organize it and make sure that you take time every day to do it, then it's amazing how much progress you can make. Now, this goes for also for everything in our lives, and as we're talking about devotional service, the Goswamis of Vrindavan are glorified by Srinivasacharya, who says, Sankhya Purvakanamagana Natibi Kalavasani Kritao, that they counted everything. Sankhya means to count. Purvakanamagana. All the mantras they chanted, all of the times that they bowed down to other devotees, they counted it. How much Shastra they're reading, they counted it. So find if you make a goal for these things, in 5 years, you're going to be 5 years older anyway. But if you have a system where every day drops a day, you're doing something to advance your devotional service, then you become learned. Prabhupada said if you chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day, you'll become a pundit. And practically anything you do over a lifetime, if you can do for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, after a while, it becomes something actually astounding what you can do if you stay steady in these things. And you always win with the fundamentals, with the basics. If you find out what are the most important disciplines, what are the most important activities that you have to do every day, and then you make sure that you do those as the center of your life, then it leads to a very productive life. So far I talked about clarity. It is actually a very liberating experience. When there are so many things to do, there's a tendency to just waste time because it seems overwhelming and think I can't get it done anyway. But if you break it down into small parts and see what's most important and move ahead with the things that are vital, then it gives you energy. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. But so far as talking about clarity, think on paper, make sure you write it down. Next is decide exactly what you want and write it down. And set a deadline for your goals. There are a couple apps, there's about 10 or 15 I've seen. They're countdown apps. I have one on my phone. And you can start, you can have a whole list of things you're counting down. For instance, you know, the day you're going to leave your body. They don't have that one figured out yet. But if they did, it would be quite motivating, don't you think? You had one, if they had a little app that figured out when you, the day you were going to leave your body and then you said it, you might be a little more motivated to move forward. But I think, nah, it could be, you know, it's probably a million years from now. But you can at least, if we don't know that, you can look at, you know, dates in the future. When are you going to turn a certain age and set your clock to that and say, let me achieve something for that time. And this helps with the law of forced efficiency, that you know there's a deadline. I've talked about this before, how you, right before you go on a trip, you tend to get more done. And in the 15 minutes right before the cab comes to pick you up, then you can get, you know, a week's worth of work done just in a minute. Hello, yes, okay, yeah, bye, and then finish everything up. So if you have these compartments of time that you're working under, it tends to help you not waste the time. So then organize your list into a plan. Take action on your plan immediately and resolve to do something every single day that moves you towards your major goal. So those are some points on clarity. And you can change your life just by taking time every day to sort things out so they're not just overwhelming. Okay, so far? And number two is to plan every day in advance. Like Ogmandino used to say, never greet the dawn without a map. And if you decide ahead of time, especially if you decide the evening before, and you write down what your plans are for the morning, as soon as you wake up, then you'll have some directive. You'll have some momentum also from the previous night of thinking it over, what you're going to do the next morning. For instance, if you organize your sadhana, all the things you're going to chant, all the things that you're going to read, and you make a list. When you wake up, you'll immediately start towards doing those things. In the Panchatrik Vidhi, there's a way in which there's a very regulated program for waking up, purifying the senses, taking bath, and then chanting mantras, entering the temple, and so forth. Right, Janardhan? He's our Panchatriki. He's a full-time pujari in San Diego. And it's a very regulated life. Krishna says in the Gita, that's raga dvesha vimuktaistu, that the senses are overcome by raga dvesha. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayar indriyaischaran atmavashar vidhyatma prasadam adigachati. That one should learn to regulate the senses. By regulating the senses and following what Prabhupada translates as the regulative principles of freedom, one can attain the full mercy of the Lord. So this Panchatrik regulation, it means that you find a way in which to regulate your life around the principle of serving Krishna. And as you do that, you're able to control the senses, and Krishna gives special mercy, and it allows you to calmly and with a clear mind chant Hare Krishna. So never greet the dawn without a map. If you wake up and you don't know what you're going to do, or you're not clear about what are the steps you're going to take that day, then you won't be as efficient as if you do. So planning every day in advance can just take a few minutes if you organize things in a list. And you might have a master list, you might have a monthly list, a weekly list, and a daily list. Now, when making lists and organizing information, there's a rule called the 10-90 rule. You've heard of the 80-20 rule, right? What is that 80-20 rule? The Pareto principle, right? What is it?
80% perspiration and 20% inspiration.
That's pretty good too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was thinking of the Alfredo Pareto came up with this idea. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. 80% work, 20% people do the 80% work.
Yeah. And there's also a way in which 20% of your activities get 80% of the result, and 80% of your activities that get 20% of the result. So this is the 80-20 rule. And this is called the 10-90 rule. The first 10% of time that you spend planning and organizing your work before you begin will save you as much as 90% of the time in getting the job done once you've started. Should I say it again? The first 10% of time that you spend planning and organizing your work before you begin will save you as much as 90% of the time in getting the job done once you've started. So then the 80-20 rule comes in, and there's a way in which there are some things that are easy to do, and there's a tendency to do those first because they're easy. But time management experts recommend that figure out what are the hard things, what are the 20% of things that get the 80% result. The ones that you're resisting are probably the ones that are going to get the big result. You're procrastinating because, and the way I procrastinate is I do all the little things first. So one way to separate yourself from those who have less efficiency is to find out what are those activities that are actually the most important. And even if you have resistance to them, do those the first thing in the day. Do them before you do anything else. Because then, once you've overcome those, you're fearful of doing it, you're fearful of making the call, it's something you're dreading doing. But if you do it anyway, then it releases all kinds of energy so that you can move ahead and do all the other things that you want to do. So resist the temptation to clear up small things first. Don't major in minor things. So there's a rule which says long-term thinking improves short-term decisions. Long-term thinking improves short-term decisions. So in the way of planning, if you have a clearer idea of what your longer-term goals are, then your shorter-term goal setting will be much clearer, and your motivation will be there also. Reflection so far, anything that you heard that's usable? Okay, go ahead.
I really like the 10% rule that you said, that it's so important for us to first plan out things and chalk things out, because I've noticed that a lot at work, that we start doing projects without doing proper planning because we are under market pressure, things like that, and we end up having to redo so many things again and again because that beam direction was not there. So
nice, practical. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for sharing practical points. One point I like was do everything, something that makes towards your major goal. Maybe it may be small thing, but it gives you momentum to. Otherwise, if you lose that, then even that small thing will keep you momentum toward maybe the big goal.
Yeah, that really works with all kinds of practices. Does anybody else have that experience? Something's overwhelming, but then you pick out one small thing that you can do rather than trying to embrace the whole thing in your mind. Yes?
On the writing thing, I was reminded one of my friends in college in engineering, he had put on the roof just underneath his bed, get up and study. You need a job. So whenever he was whiling away his time on the bed, he used to see that and get inspired by that.
So, go ahead.
And the other point which I really liked was the point which you mentioned that every day you need to do something on that, particularly about the writing of the book, even though it looks such a voluminous thing. Every day if you spend at least, if you have the discipline to write at least one line, then it's, you keep the momentum going. It's very practical indeed.
Yeah, Burijan Prabhu told me that once. He said he said he finished three books, even though he's very busy, has a full schedule, and he said that he did it by vowing to write at least one line every day in his book.
Prabhuji, doing the little things every day without having a goal in mind, I had a profound experience. As per your advice and directions, I started reading one shloka every day of Srimad Bhagavatam, and but you were just doing it, and I have no clue how long it is going to be. But then some time ago, I was talking with Damodar Prabhu, and he mentioned that why don't you read a chapter of just the meaning, not detailed description of purport, just read the chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. You could finish in the whole Bhagavatam in, I forgot, 6 months or maybe a year. I thought that is a good idea, right? Because then you know there is a goal. Then ever since, I think it's only 2 months, but it's just, it happened that I'm able to do that. I've run like, now you started feeling like I have now almost done the fourth chapter, fourth canto, and I was, otherwise, every day you read one shloka, you're just right there itself. You don't even move So I think as you have a goal, bigger picture, you understand when you're going to finish the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, then you started feeling to read more, and then as you read more, I think the story and everything makes more sense to you. So that was very profound, that if you have a goal, then it is easier to tie together.
Nice, very practical. Since we introduced this page by page, be a sage, how many of you use that? Thank you, Kara. Yeah, I've seen devotees become sort of immediately enlivened. After looking at the whole Bhagavatam and thinking, how am I going to read all 12 cantos? I don't feel capable of doing that. And then seeing how, if it's broken down into daily quota, take a daily quota of pages. And everyone knows by now how many pages you have to read every day in order to finish the Bhagavatam in a year, right? The magic number is 41. 41 pages a day, and you'll finish the Bhagavatam in 1 year. 1 year. And so, whatever the number is, if you break it down, then the Bhagavatam seems approachable, and you can do, your particular quota. Yes?
I like very much the overcome the temptation to put aside things you don't like to deal with, and getting to doing small things that you like to do. It's something that I do a lot. So that's...
You like that point?
I like very much, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do the big things first.
Yeah.
It's called, in his book, Swallow That Frog, Brian Tracy calls, if you have two frogs to swallow, you pick the biggest, ugliest one first. So the big tasks you have to do, you just take the big one first, and then the other ones, that's not so bad. But overcoming and dealing with the big things first, yeah. Yes, please go ahead on the phone. Okay, you can jump in at any time. Okay, so motivation requires motive. Got to have a motive. If you have a motive that you're trying to achieve something, then you'll be motivated. So be in touch with what that is. One of the things is think of the potential consequences of your choices. So if you make bad choices every day, and you think they're inconsequential, if you repeat them over a long period of time, they become significant. They actually lead to a... they lead to bad habits, and your bad habits lead you into a ditch that you can't get out of. On the other hand, the practical and very optimistic reverse is that if you develop good habits and you repeat them every day over a long period of time, then you, as they say, a big shot's just a little shot who keeps on shooting. So if you keep repeating the same good habits over a period of time, you'll become very successful. May I have a first canto, Bhagavatam, please? And turn to the end of the fourth chapter? Or is it the end of the third chapter, last purport in the third chapter? And in this purport, Prabhupada talks about how one should hear with rapt attention. And then he gives a series about how to prepare oneself to hear. So near the third part of the purport, Prabhupada says the word Navishta means that Suta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So particularly, Prabhupada mentions a series that one thing affects the next, that no one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So there's a way in which every discipline affects the other disciplines we have in our life. It's not that you can compartmentalize and just say that I'll be undisciplined in one area of my life and I'll still hear with rapt attention in another. The small things, the small habits that we develop in our lives have an overall effect on our ability to move forward, even in the process of hearing. So think of potential consequences of your choices. So I mentioned the law of force efficiency. It goes along with goals. If you make goals in your devotional service, and law of force efficiency says that if you have a particular point in time that you're working towards, then you can, you'll do much more. We have the monthly Sankirtan festival as an example. One of the principles of this is that you have to be working toward a point in time. And for instance, when NASA builds a rocket and they have a time when they have to finish, the rocket's not the big deal. When it takes off, it's not, I mean, a few people watch on TV and stuff like that. But the really consequential thing is what they achieve in working towards that goal. They invent all kinds of new systems. In fact, the whole idea of time management and everything that comes from NASA and working towards a deadline of shooting off a rocket and so forth. So, for instance, in devotional service, when you set a goal, like we have these special days, devotees, one of the devotional principles is to take full advantage of the appearance days of the Lord and days like Ekadashi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that those who honor these special days, they make great advancement in devotional service. So if you look forward to those days, for instance, you plan ahead that Kartik is coming. So you start now planning, what am I going to do for Kartik? and build that up. You know, what kind of extra devotional service are you going to do? Something. And you plan for it now. Then you'll start anticipating that. And even before Kartik arrives, it'll increase your level of devotional service. If before Janmashtami comes, you decide, I'm going to finish reading a particular book. Every year before the Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, we work towards finishing the Ramayana. And I don't know how many years it's been now since we've been doing that. How many do you think?
4 years.
And so every year, now then it becomes a habit. It becomes a tradition, and we couldn't stop if we wanted to. And then the years go by. Like I said, you'll be 5 years older in 5 years anyway, but if you read the Ramayana every year for 5 years, you'll be vastly improved in your devotional service. So pick points in time for the law of forced efficiency. You can pick any time that you want. You can work towards every Ekadashi to improve yourself. You don't have to wait for any major event. You can do it at any time to decide that you're going to improve yourself by working towards a certain goal. How is this working for everyone so far? Any points? Is it too clinical or practical?
Practical.
It's practical? Unclinical? You what?
It's practical and clinical.
Okay. Here's another point. Start small. That whatever you're going to do, start small, because oftentimes one's overwhelmed just with the prospect of doing something big. So take the smallest thing that you can do and start. For instance, we just had the monthly Sankirtan festival that we inaugurated in San Diego. And as we do everywhere, when we're first starting this monthly Sankirtan festival, we explain that the only goal for the first day is that we're all going to go out and touch the pavement. And once we touch the pavement, we're done. And that don't feel any obligation to perform or do any book distribution or anything like that. And that the hardest thing really is just getting everybody out at the same time and going from one place to the next. And it is hard. It's troop movement. That's the most difficult part. One car broke down, the other car got hit by a U-Haul, and you know, there were all these, in the world is called Durga, Durgachati, it's difficult to go. So all the devotees went out, and I could see when I explained over and over again that we're not distributing any books today, we're just going to touch the pavement. After they realized I was serious, then everyone relaxed, and they thought, okay, I'll go along. And when we got there, we got out of the car, and I said, everyone get together. And we went to the sidewalk and said, ready? And we all put our foot out and touched the pavement and said, now we're done. And now everything else is extra. Whatever you want to do now, you can do. And then everyone felt glad to move forward. So putting the bar very low to start with on various tasks can also help. If you feel overwhelmed about starting something, start with something very, very simple and small. Just that gets you in the motion of starting to do it. So think small in the beginning, because little steps can lead to something really big. I was thinking today.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please. Is that Kathleen?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I was wondering, because when you were talking about, you know, we should actually tackle the big things first. And I know at work that really works for me. If I go into work and I get the biggest thing done that I really regret or hate having to do, then I can get so much more done during the day. So my question at that point was, how would you apply that to your spiritual practice? And then now you just said, well, start small and work up to something big. So those kind of, they seem to contradict each other.
Yeah, because we need all kinds of tools, because Maya is so tricky. You may have the philosophy, I'll conquer the big things, and then Maya will say, oh, just don't do anything because it's too overwhelming today. Then at least then you can switch gears and say, okay, I'll do the small thing to get started. Because when the mode of ignorance sets in, and it will at some point, then all bets are off. And you have to have some way to get out of the mud. It's like quicksand. So I think that applies mostly to when there's no momentum and when the inertia is so strong for not moving that you have to have something to say, okay, just do one thing. I have to clean the house, but it's a complete mess, and it's a big job, and I don't feel like it. All right, just pick up that one piece of paper. That's all I'm asking you to do. Just get out of your chair and pick up that one piece of paper. And then when you get that one thing, they say, okay, just do one more little thing. And then it's a series. Like mathematical problems, I always thought, it's like, actually, they're not that difficult if you break them down into little parts. If you know how each one of the sections works, then the whole thing, the equation, although it looks impressive, it's not that big a thing. So that's what I meant, Kathleen. Does that help? She's back on mute, I think.
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Prabhu. I had a feeling my husband was going to come in and start saying something cute or something. But
okay.
But that made a lot of sense because when I was talking to you after your lecture a couple Saturdays ago when you were teaching us how to start learning text and stuff, and I told you I have all these books piled around me and I didn't know where to start, and you handed me that one index card. And that one index card got me started, so thank you very much.
Do you have it with you?
I do have it with me.
Could you read it to everybody?
No, probably don't do that to me.
Just the English.
Oh, just the English.
Start small.
English want me to read. Well, I was gonna ask you even how to pronounce something too, but yeah. So the English is life's desires should. Life's desire should never be directed. Right, exactly. Directed towards sense gratification, one should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiring about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's world.
Works. Sorry about that. I wrote it pretty fast. Thank you, Kathleen.
So I memorized the first line, the second line, the third line, and now I'm working on memorizing the fourth line. So thank you, Prabhu.
Okay, everyone give her a hand. Yay! Sadhu, sadhu. The first verse I ever learned was from the Shriya Upanishad, the last verse, the last mantra. Because I got that book, and I got to that last 18th mantra, and I thought, this is a good mantra. I had to memorize it. And it felt like I conquered an empire when I got that mantra. I felt like I was part of something bigger than me, you know, and that's the exciting thing about being a human being, is to use all these efficiencies, but to connect them all to Krishna. And you can really develop into something extraordinary. People are extraordinary. Humans are extraordinary. Krishna says, I'm the ability in man. And when all those things are applied to progress in devotional service, they become augmented. Okay, so a couple tips and quotes. Find out what successful people do and do the same things until you get the same results. Shastra says, Bejare muneyo tagre bhagavan tamadhoksajam. Satvam bishudham shemaya kalpante yenutaniha. That previously all the great liberated souls worshipped Lord Vishnu because he was above the three modes of material nature, and therefore they attained the highest results. Anyone who follows in their footsteps is eligible for the same result. So even if one isn't a great exalted personality, if one simply tries to emulate and follow in the footsteps. This is one of the great concepts given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam about how to advance in spiritual life, is to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. And that means that you do your best to emulate them in your life and follow their lead. And then even if you come from a lowly background, you're eligible for the same result. The second one has to do with focus, which is so important. When we're performing japa, for instance, there's a vast difference between chanting with focus and chanting inattentively. In fact, it is said that the root cause of all the offenses in chanting Hare Krishna is inattention. So learning this one technique of how to focus, practicing over and over again, focusing, which is very difficult because the mind is chancha, means it's restless, it's strong, it is insane, and it is very determined, these four things. So it takes time to actually make friends with the mind and discipline the mind. And in this, one may have to start small. For instance, how many beads can one move and chant the mantra and actually really think of the mantra and concentrate the mantra without jumping up and going somewhere else, or the mind running off to another planet? So it takes practice, but it's worth the effort to learn how to focus. And when doing a particular task, it's important to focus on the task at hand. For instance, in the environment in which we live, if you have a lot of projects going all at the same time and your desk is full of various papers, as I told you many times, a professional organizer once told me, this amounts to visual noise. All the extra things that you have around that aren't related to the task that you're performing, they distract your attention and you don't even know it at the time. So the difference between doing something when there's many projects open and focusing on one thing at a time can be quite impressive. So practice focusing on one thing at a time. And that includes nowadays turning off all the other kinds of machines that tend to interrupt our flow. My father was a bit of a Luddite. You know what a Luddite is? Someone who resists the advancement of technology. My mom and dad lived into their 90s, and my mother made the transition into the computer world, but my dad stayed on a typewriter. They were both professors. I don't know how he did it, but he stayed on a typewriter until he always kept asking. Anyway, he resisted about the technology. But I remember if we were at home, somebody would call on the phone and he would come in and say, "You're wanted on the electric talking machine." And then there was a phone call for you. But now there's a million different electronic impulses that come in. We don't even notice it. I mean, previously, you know, if one phone call came in during the day, it was like a big deal. And I remember when the first cell phones came out, they were this big. They were this fat and a long antenna. And I remember there was a friend visiting from New York, and I said, "Yeah, I'm going to get one of those cell phones." He goes, "You really want to do that? Have that thing follow you around everywhere?" And now it's ubiquitous. Everywhere you go, there's some kind of device ringing. In any class, any assembly, you're listening to a recording, and the phones are going off here and there. And what kind of distraction does that cause to the mind? And in the process of meditation and yoga, practicing detaching oneself from all those stimuli can be very helpful. Just the effort to turn everything off, power down, close yourself in, get a do not disturb sign on your door, and just that very act of giving yourself the permission and the time not to have to attend to all these other things can change your perspective for the day. And the focus can be very powerful. I always like to go visit Satyadev's room. He has a room in his house where he does all this japa, and you walk in, it's so peaceful in there. There's a few pictures on the wall, and that's about it. But he always has, you can see his mats on the floor, and it's all set up, very peaceful. And he sits he's very good at focusing. He's practiced for a long time. And whenever we travel together, just get in the habit of focusing. And the results are amazing. So this practice of focus is something that you can work on. This is something you can actually develop. It's possible to learn the art of focus. Put other things away. Don't multitask. You don't have to. And concentrate on one thing at a time. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Krishna says, don't be let your mind be many branched. Bahu Shaka. If it has many branches going different ways, you'll be disturbed. But if you are focused on one thing, and it's the most important thing, then it can be very powerful. Yes. Yes.
So the problem comes, Prabhuji, because we try so hard and then we come up with a schedule or a plan in the day to focus and all that. And the very nature of the world is changes come in our lives and it just wipes off everything. Like it could be travel or other life instances and then we again struggle back to get into the thing. So will there be a time where we could like completely focus no matter what storms come in our lives? So how do we maintain that focus?
Will there come a time in your life when you'll have that opportunity? Is that what you're asking? How do you sustain the focus over time? Well, you know, paradoxically, do you also have to be... I'm talking about all these things that sound so rigid, you know, setting goals and, you know, forced efficiency and these things. You also, at the same time, have to be a little flexible. And you may make so many to-do lists and you may have goals and things like that. And when a person's riding a horse, Krishna gives this example in the 11th canto to Uddhava. When you're riding a horse, sometimes you have to let the reins out a little bit. You can't always be pulling him back in or he'll kick you off. And so, you know, moving forward with many of these very efficient ways of living and so forth, you also have to have some flexibility. But the principles are still sound. If you write things down, sometimes you may get waylaid for some time, but then you'll go back and then you'll have a way to pick up again. And you'll also notice that even amidst a lot of the distraction that you've gotten, other, you know, some of the things done. I know with my reading of 41 pages of the Bhagavatam a day, I always carry my Bhagavatam with me when I travel, and I make arrangements ahead of time to make sure that it's like a game almost, to make sure that I have it, that I get it done, and things like that. It makes life really exciting. And some days I just get so busy that, you know, I can't get to it. Then, you know, I make it up at another time, and I just, you know, Prabhupada also, when he was... there are certain things that take precedent over other things. So there's big events that come up, important things that happen. You have to attend to those first because they're emergencies and take care of them. But in general, if you have this thread going through your life where you're planning, you have something to come back to. Otherwise, it's just chaos. And balance doesn't mean that you're always on the straight line, as I've said many times. It means you know how to come back to the center. And if you're clear about what you're doing and where you're going, then you have a place to come back to regularly. Does that help?
Yes, Prabhuji. Okay. One more question that I have.
Sure.
You mentioned that we should have a motive to be motivated. But mostly what happens is if the motive is something related to, even if it's devotional, but it's mainly because I might get some adoration or profit, then the tendency to do sadhana and focus is more than having a motive that's unalloyed to please.
Akamo sarvakamo va moksha kamo udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Bhagavatam says that whatever condition you're in now, just bring it to Krishna and move forward, and the motives will be purified. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are four main motives. First is fear. If I don't do this, then what will happen? Second one is prospect. What am I going to get out of this? Third is, and next highest, is duty. I do it because it's my duty to do this. And the highest motivation is love. And so there may be a mixture of these things in the beginning, but as we continue, they can become purified. Yes. And then we have a text that has come in.
Thank you, Maharaj. I like the point when you told that follow the successful people till the time you get the same results what they have got. And that is very, very, and the verse from the Bhagavatam, Bhejire Munyo Thagare. I have a question, we always see Prabhupada so much verse in all the Vedas, all the Shastras. So is there any reference, like how he used to read and memorize these verses and all in his lifetime?
Not so much. I've asked about that, and I'm curious. But one thing I do know is that Prabhupada was used to chanting chapters. And you'll hear there's recordings of him chanting whole chapters of Bhagavatam and Gita. So in fact, you can get most of all his chanting of the Bhagavad Gita shlokas and put it on your iPhone or something and listen to it. And he also advocated it to the devotees many times, that you should do this every day, you should do that every day. And Prabhupada was accustomed to always staying engaged. If it wasn't a bhajan, it was reading something or preaching or writing something. And often you have to accommodate your mind and senses in that way, even in devotional service, because you need variety. And until you develop a taste for certain things, it's really hard to do them for long periods of time. When Radhika Raman Prabhu was here, he complimented the devotees of ISV, and he said that they had great stamina for hearing. It's because we practice a lot. We have longer than usual classes. A lot of places have 40-minute classes. And if they sit down for a two-hour class, they're like, when's this guy going to stop? You know? But still, in devotional life, there's so many things that you can do. And like, if you look in Prabhupada's living space, you know, I have a harmonium here and the Madanga cartels, the books are there. This is really, you know, an ideal situation to go from one thing to the next. You always have some engagement to move you along. But particularly, I don't know, in fact, one of my Vyasa Puja offerings to Prabhupada I had written, I was asking that question. I wish I, just like Valmiki had been there to see the Ramayana all the pastimes, I was praying that I could go back and see Prabhupada in all the different phases of his life as he was learning the Shastra and things like that. Because I would like to see what he did, where he did, who he sat with, and things like that. But he liked to hear. That's one thing his spiritual master said, that he marked him, that he didn't go away. And Prabhupada said himself that in the beginning, he didn't understand everything that his Guru Maharaj was saying, but he still stayed there and he listened and he stayed. There was that incident on the yatra when some devotees, there was an announcement that there was a opportunity to go see the deity and that it would be closed after that day, and or they could stay back and there would be a class by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. So many people went to see the deity, and Abhay Charanaravinda and many others stayed. In fact, I'm not even sure he was initiated at that time, but it was before he was. And so he stayed along with some others and listened very carefully. And later, when he was recommended for initiation, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, I have marked him. He likes to hear. He does not go away. He stays and hears. So one thing, Prabhupada was an ardent hearer. And that's one of the main qualifications for advancing in spiritual life is to, you know, organize your life so that you can hear. And if you have that contact of hearing, then you'll be making advancement if you're hearing with attention. And keep the vibration going always. Yes?
Just a practical question. Like, you decide 41 page, but when you're traveling, then you're using the electronic media. So that time, how
I like
you
to bring my book, because I have those. I have that small set of Bhagavatams. Okay. It would be hard if you bring the first canto that's all in one. But yeah, I'd like to bring the book because if it's a really long trip, and like in Vrindavan, I keep a set of books over there because I like to carry the paper book with me. But if it's a shorter trip, I like to carry the actual book with me because there's something about the... I mean, I have the electronic media also, and at nighttime writing in the car or something like that, when I'm reading to somebody, it works, or looking things up. But there's something about it being all in one unit that I'm familiar with. When I look into the electronic screen, it's just unlimited what's in there.
Thank you.
Okay, a couple more points. Oh, yes, and an email. Or a text just came in.
So Sudhir Prabhu actually gave a very nice example that most of us use of jotting things down. He said we go to the grocery shop and we always carry a grocery list to make sure that you don't forget any items.
Yeah.
So that was him. And then Sundari Leela Mataji, actually she sent me a picture. And which has got some nice words.
Oh, and by the, I just want to comment on that point that Sudeep made about writing things down. Tejas Prabhu, do you know Tejas? He was out in, he was Prabhupada's secretary for a long time. And he told me, he had a lot of instruction from Prabhupada, and he's writing a book now. But he told me about accounting. Prabhupada said accounting means writing everything down immediately. Immediately. So this is one thing of efficiency, time management, everything is to make sure you write it down. Don't say, you know, I'll get it later, but capture it. It means you have to have something. I always have these little things. And I have stacks of them at home. And there's so much good stuff in here because when I hear something, I write it down as quickly as I can. I just jot it down in this book. And then later on, I put it onto electronic form, and I go through it, comb through it, and I find a lot of good things. Yes, one other thing.
This is from Sundari Leela Mataji. And she says, you will never change your life until you change something you do daily.
Ooh, that's a good one. You'll never change your life until you change something you do daily. Good one.
And it goes on, the secret of your success
is... I'm writing that one down.
I'll send you the image too. The secret of your success is found in your daily routine.
Say it again.
The secret of your success is found in your daily routine. And this is from John C. Maxwell, and his website is addictedtosuccess.com.
Good one. There you go. Okay. So, focus, we talked about the ability to concentrate single-mindedly on your most important task, to do it well, and to finish it completely is the key to great success, achievement, respect, status, and happiness in life. I think that's from Brian Tracy. Your ability to select your most important task at every moment and then to start on that task and get it done quickly and well will probably have more impact on your success than any other quality or skill you can develop. An average person who develops the habit of setting clear priorities and getting important tasks completed quickly will run circles around a genius who talks a lot and makes wonderful plans but gets very little done. Do you like that one? Continually remind yourself that one of the most important decisions you make each day is your choice of what you will do immediately and what you will do later if you do it all. And as Krishna says in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanya gamina paramam purusham divyam yati partanu chintayan. And that is that you have to practice a lot. Abhyasa, yoga, yuktena. So practice is the key. And if you practice correctly and do it slow and methodically, then gradually you'll become an expert and you can do it fast and correctly. Or as my Madhunga teacher used to say, that if you do it fast and incorrectly, you'll never be able to do it fast and correctly. But if you start and do it super slow and do it correctly, then gradually you'll develop that hand-brain coordination. You'll be able to do it quickly. So practice, abhyas, means to do something over and over and over again. And this is important in the practice of devotional service, that we renew our practice every day. Start over as a beginner. Don't think I've ever done this. I don't think I'm an expert. Think I have to start over and do it just like a beginner would do it. And practice it very, very carefully. And the ultimate force deficiency and the test that comes is, think Bhagavatam. Death. Death is waiting. So this is the final exam. So throughout one's life, one develops these habits, devotional habits, to think of Krishna 24 hours a day, and not and to have some devotional engagement, to engage the senses, the mind, and thinking of Krishna from the moment that one wakes up to the moment one goes to sleep. And Prabhupada mentioned that he had a merchant friend who was quoting prices all day long, and then he saw when he was sleeping, he was also quoting prices. So Prabhupada said the same thing: as you're practicing, then you'll also, even while you're sleeping, you'll be able to think of Krishna as well. So discipline, willpower. I mean, how do you get the willpower to actually do these things anyway? Because you say, do all these things, but then what if I just can't do them? You have to have willpower, right? Okay. So, will is defined as the faculty by which a person decides on and initiates action. Also, willpower, control deliberately exerted to do something or to restrain one's own impulses. A deliberate or fixed desire or intention. So this is a very important concept, discipline. And all good things come from this, learning how to discipline oneself. Because from this discipline, the word discipline actually comes from a root word which means learner. And as I mentioned before, one who's able to regulate the senses, to discipline the senses in devotional service, gets the full mercy of the Lord. So where does it come from? One thing is that practicing a japa, as I mentioned, there's something very powerful about taking time every day to set everything else aside, shut everything else off, and to just sit down with the holy name and let all the other things take a secondary role. Just doing that helps one develop discipline, because even if you do it a little bit, there's a very powerful objectivity that one develops. Nam bina kichu nahi ko ara choda bhuvana maje. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's nothing else to be had in the 14 worlds except for the holy name. So if one can have that experience every day, at least try to have that experience every day, that there's nothing else to be had except for this holy name, and prioritize it, even if one's not experiencing it fully, but one makes that intellectual decision that I'm going to put everything else as secondary for the time being, then there's some special ability then to discipline one's senses throughout the day, just by starting in that way, by giving prevalence, by giving priority to the chanting of the holy name. One point. Another point is it's important to exercise, because the physical body, we're encased in a physical body, and the body has its rhythms and it has its limitations. And one must take care of it. It's a gift. The tendency over the years in ISKCON, because the vehicles didn't belong to anybody, they were just temple vehicles that generally always fall apart. He showed us, Kumar's laughing, he's seen it. I remember driving to the airport in Detroit one morning on a... It was snowing and there was ice all over the road and everything like that. And we were in a van, and the hood of the van broke because it rusted through, and it slammed up into the windshield as we were going full speed down the freeway. And one of the devotees had to lean out the window in traffic to try to, you know, get across, but the driver couldn't see a thing. And I remember in Los Angeles when the devotees picked up Jai Pataka Maharaj once, they opened the door to the van, and he sat down, and the door fell off. And he didn't even look up because he was so used to it. So one shouldn't let one's body run down like this. It's actually a gift. And you'll notice that Prabhupada very carefully maintained his body. Every day he went for a long walk. That was doctor's orders that he got. And then he also got therapeutic massage twice a day, and he was very careful about what he ate because he had to maintain his service. So it's important for developing mental discipline and for one's spiritual practice that one take care of the physical body and not simply think that it can be neglected over time. It will have there will be serious consequences. One can even lose the strength of one's heart, and one becomes prone to stroke and all kinds of heart disease and things like that. So that's not a very good idea. It's a good idea to invest some time every day in exercising, especially walking. Walking is a good exercise that you can do into your old age. It doesn't require a lot of paraphernalia or any video screen or anything like that. That you can walk pretty much anywhere, but should be done regularly. And there's also a way in which when you're careful, but when you exercise, there are chemicals in your body that are released that give you the ability to that lift your mood, endorphins. When you exercise properly, there's natural mood elevators that give you the kind of optimism in life that you need to perform discipline. Does that make sense? Okay. Another is to be accountable to someone. If you find someone that you can be accountable to, it's amazing how much you can, more you can do, and how much you can stay disciplined. If there's somebody you trust, or even somebody that maybe is anonymous or something like that, but you let them know that this is what I'm working on, would you check in on me and make sure that I'm on track? That can really help one's discipline. Thank you to everyone who's joined us online. Again, you can text in if you have any questions or comments. Another thing for discipline in one's life is to eliminate unnecessary decisions, because then you can give your full attention to the things that are most important to you. What do I mean by that? Well, some people wear the same clothes every day. One thing. I mean, not to be boring or anything like that, but even in the secular world, we see that, I mean, not the same world's clothes without washing them. Someone was looking at me like, but the same style. Prabhupada mentions this as far as hairstyles go, that, you know, keep it simple. One of the reasons some people, you know, keep short hair is that you don't have to deal with it. Then, there's, you know, clothing choices. If you have to make a lot of choices every day, that can waste a lot of time too, and a lot of money and space, everything like that. Keeping all these different kinds of clothes. Imelda Marcos had something like 5,000 pairs of shoes, which you really don't need. And this comes into the realm of over collecting, atyahara. There's lots of ways that these kinds of things can stifle one's one's discipline, but keeping it simple. Steve Jobs, I think, always wore jeans and a turtleneck, black turtleneck, because he didn't want to deal with a lot of different options. He was focused on a particular discipline. So eliminating a lot of unnecessary decisions that one has to make. And then just the the whole science of how one develops good habits. Decide that you want to develop good habits, and then as you take one filament and you add another filament the next day and you keep adding, then you come up with a thread. If you keep adding, doing the same thing over a period of time, you get a string, and then you get a cord, then you get a rope, and then it becomes unbreakable. So it's really exciting to consciously decide to make new good habits. And if you start with a clear idea, write it down, and then take accountability, and then practice it every day until it becomes a ritual, a routine. Ritual is a good thing, actually, if it's not mindless. It's a way in which you're honoring a power that's higher than you when you're performing a ritual. Just be conscious of why you're doing it, and get in the habit of doing it every day. And the lifetime can go by as one is engaged in these very regular activities. See some devotees like Mother Nidra in Denver, Colorado. She's been performing the Mangalartik for Radha Govinda for about 35 years without stopping. Every morning she's there doing the Mangalartik. See Bhuvaneshwar Prabhu in Vrindavan. He must have moved there 25 years ago, maybe longer. And every day he cooks the Rajbhog for Krishna Balaram. Best Rajbhog anywhere. And it can be 140 degrees in the kitchen or whatever, but every day he's there. You know Boo? Yeah. Yeah. So, and after a while, you know, if you keep doing the same thing every day, if you stay regulated over time, it may seem like some small service or something insignificant, but if you practice and develop these into a ritual, you'll become famous in the spiritual world. I mean, just the Shastra says for one spiritual activity, although there are all these various activities that one can perform, if one does one consistently over time and sticks with it and stays regular in one's performance, then one becomes perfected by that. So find ways in which you can regulate your life around the practice of devotional service and do it every day. And even if it starts in a small way and you do it like drops of stone, drops a day on stone, then gradually it will wear a hole in even the hardest substance, and one will come to the perfect stage. So just need to hear back a couple of reflections of things that we talked about tonight so we can capture them really quick. We'll take a lightning round, about 5 minutes, of any of the points that stuck. Yes.
Thank you for a wonderful class. We talk about success several times. One of the things I learned that success is the people who are success in this business world and the leaders, the political leaders, they were always thinking what they want. When we study, that their mind is always thinking, engaging to think what they want. I think it is also applied for the spiritual life, Bhakti Marga. But my question is, we doing all these things, kind of getting karmic bondage again instead of liberating yourself. That was my fear.
Doing what?
We are doing all this engagement is more and more.
Which engagement?
The preparing the day-to-day life.
Yes.
And organizing for a certain way. I was wondering, it is helping to the liberate or getting to the bondage mark to the karmic way?
Yes, strengthening the bonds that free us. Raga dvesha vimuktaishtu vishayan indriyaischaran atma vashaira vidheyatma prasadam adigachati. Krishna talks about the regulated principles of freedom. It sounds paradoxical that freedom and regulation go together. But in the beginning, this vidhi bhakti, or the rules and regulations, mean that the senses are so addicted to their objects in the material world that by employing the same kinds of activities that you consider to be materially progressive to the principles of devotional service in as much as you can become efficient in doing your devotional service. It's like taking a thorn out with a thorn, says Narada Muni in his instructions. The thorn stuck, so use another thorn to take it out. So this, as I began the class, Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi, it's mentioned that the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were meticulous in counting how they did their japa every day, how they did their bowing down. They scheduled everything. And they were setting an example for us how to perform devotional service in the state of bondage, that one is still addicted to the senses and everything else, so you use those same principles of efficiency that you normally do for getting ahead in business and so forth for the sake of advancing your devotional service. Is that all right? Okay. Yes.
Prabhu, I am in the project management, and one of the mantras is quantitative project management, where you need to measure whatever you're doing. So I was just amazed that how the Goswamis, so many centuries back, they were in the top-notch management.
Right? Yeah.
Actually, they were doing it by measuring things. So it was very amazing.
Nice. Project management.
Yes. Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances. This is Malini Devi.
It's Malini. Hare Krishna. Go ahead, Malini.
Prabhuji, thank you so much for a wonderful lecture, Prabhuji. This was the most practical lecture I heard. Every lecture is practical, but this was the most practical for me. A few things actually stuck with me was the first point that you mentioned. I was actually feeling morose that I was not able to come to the temple to listen to the class. But I thought, I have the online broadcast and everything, so I shouldn't be. And the moment I dialed in, you mentioned the verse, apilauliam tatamulyam ekalam. So that was so nice to have intense greed or desire to listen or hear. And another point, which actually, I had a question lately. I have been meditating on doing your service, but I was listening to Prabhupada's lecture, and Prabhupada said that when you do your service means you're doing it because you love Krishna. So all of these services or all of these activities, chanting and everything, that you should do because you want to love Krishna. But I was thinking, I don't have love for Krishna, so what am I doing? Why am I doing all these services? How will I get love for Krishna? But that was actually nicely you gave the answer to that question, saying that what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, there are four motives. First is, the highest is love. If not love, then at least out of duty. Otherwise, it's adoration, and otherwise, fear. So that helped me a lot, Prabhuji. Actually, that question has been, I've been thinking about that for the past 2 weeks now. So I was very happy that you answered it in a nice way. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Malini. Very nice points. Yes, Rajesh, and then Hansapriya.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I think I like the point, you know, that it is not walking on the straight line. You need to come back to the center, because the way the nature of this material world is, there's so much disturbances, you know, at each moment. So, but, you know, if you stay focused, you step out but come back to the line. I think that's very practical, and we should always aim for that. We don't go further. Come back again.
Yeah, actually, those elements that are very flexible in this world tend to be strong. For instance, muscles, when they're very flexible, then they're stronger than somebody who's muscle bound. They've got so many muscles, they may be very big, but because they've become shortened and they can't move like they like. Chimpanzees, they're much stronger than humans, 8 times stronger. But you look at their arms, they're not very muscular. It's in how flexible they are and how elongated they are. So there's a way in which when we're able to be flexible, there's a kind of strength in that, because it's a long life. And there's ways in which you have to go through many different phases and face all kinds of challenges. And it's not just in the efficiency that you're so rigid that when that happens and you get knocked off your routine, then you become despondent or you think you've lost or something like that. I mean, even Krishna is mentioning in the Bhagavad Gita, apichet sudaracharo bhajate mamananyabhak, sadureva samantavya samgyag vyavasito hisaha, that if somebody's engaged in devotional service with the right motive, then even if that person deviates and shows some worldly behavior, that you still have to consider him or her saintly because they're trying. And we should give ourselves the same kind of encouragement, because there are ways in which you may fall off your routine, but instead of becoming overly rigid and then despondent because of it, you should just take up again. In fact, the Shastra says, what is the verse about offenses? What is it? Naman yeva harantyagam avishrani paryuktani tanyevana karani cha. That if one's an aparadi in chanting Hare Krishna, one should go on chanting constantly, because then one will become purified from that. Hansapriya.
I like actually a lot of points from today's class, because it's a really practical on day-to-day basis that we can use a lot of points. And also it reminded me of the class that we had from Radhika Raman Prabhu about Jiva Goswami, that how Jiva Goswami was very practical, and then how he pointed out that Srila Prabhupada was practical. Actually, on that day, something happened, and I asked Giriraj Maharaj, I'm sorry that I have to leave, but I'll see you tomorrow. And I said, I have to attend this thing. And he said, yeah, even Jiva Goswami was very practical. Srila Prabhupada was very practical. And then he himself told me to be practical. And today I've been focusing on that word, practical, and how our discipline success has been very practical. And so thank you very much for giving a very practical class.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your practical application. Really nice. Yeah.
It made me feel how this is a whole circle.
Yeah.
This makes a whole circle. And if we stay within this circle, we are going to be practical. So thank you very much.
Nice. Good point.
And then just to add to that point, your Vridanga teacher said the fast is slow. Slow is fast. And so I was thinking I need to be not fasting, being practical here. But I need to be slow in being practical.
So. Yeah, and there's stages of development in practice. And at one point, then you're unconsciously incompetent. And then you become consciously incompetent. And then you become consciously competent. And then you become unconsciously competent. This is the stages of practice. And at first, you don't know how bad you are. And it's progress when you start understanding, like, I'm really bad. In the beginning, neophytes sometimes think, oh, I know everything. I just signed up and I got this down. But then coming to the point of seeing that I really need a lot of work, I'm not that good at this. And then, you know, by step by step. Kyati?
Thank you, Prabhuji. The most thing that struck to me is doing what successful people do. So I think we'll do what our Guru Maharaj is saying and instill that in our life, and hopefully you are the one who is showing our way. So thank you very much, Prabhuji, for this wonderful lecture.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the idea. It's like this is the idea of parampara, that you emulate how the previous acharyas have done and work karma pravartanat. There's so many devotional activities you follow in the footsteps. And although one may be insignificant, then by following the footsteps, then one gets the special mercy coming down. Yeah.
I really like the point about accountability because it helps you to not hide from your goals, because if you're not answering to a person and not being looked out for, then it's easy to say, oh, maybe I just won't do it.
Yeah, it is. And if one can develop a sense of accountability to Super Soul, this is a very advantageous situation where even if there's nobody else watching and nobody else that's accountable, if you can feel that, yes, but my integrity towards Krishna is watching, he knows, then this is a very sweet relationship, actually, if one has this mentality that even no one else will know anywhere in the universe. Of course, the other thing is, someone always finds out. But Krishna knows the heart of every living entity. This is the idea. And this is actually a rasa with the Supreme Lord, that one has this awareness that Krishna is fully conscious of my thought movements. And to cultivate my sincerity at every moment that I'm offering, that I'm freely and voluntarily available to you for service. And please, you know my heart. And we were reading about Akura, how he's going to Vrindavan, and he was on this mission for Kamsa, but all the while he's aware of the fact, Krishna knows my heart. Did somebody just unmute, ready to go? Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, this is Malini again.
Yes.
Prabhuji, I just wanted to share that I received a phone call from one of the devotees, actually, who was at ISV before. And he had to go because he had another project some other place. So he was saying that he was near a temple and everything, but he said that he's missing the hearing and chanting. He said the quality that of classes, the long classes that are there at ISV, he said that he didn't find that and he's really, really missing that. And I was remembering how you mentioned that he was saying that there are only 40 or 45 minutes class, so he's not satisfied with that 45 minutes class.
Thank you very much.
So I was just appreciating, you know, how grateful we all can be that you give such nice classes so that we can have that taste for hearing more and more. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Malini.
I just wanted to add to that we have Kara Middleton, who's from Tennessee, and she made the same comment today morning. She said that she generally surfs the internet and she was trying to look for Krishna conscious topics and all that. And she said, ISV is the best. And she said, your camera system is also the way you project broadcast, classes, content coverage, everything is wonderful.
Thank you. And we'll bring out Ramanand Saka. Is Charlene in the booth also? Charlene, can you come out for a second? So this is the brains behind the broadcasting is Ramananda Saka Prabhu, and here's his apprentice now. Charlene is, as we mentioned the other day, that we'll be expanding our broadcasting services. This is just the beginning. We have we really want to offer programming that will appeal to people from many different areas around the world, and to expand our capabilities of doing so. So Ramananda Saka is dedicated to training new people how to work in the booth and do everything that you need to do. So those who are interested in that service can also see him. Apparently Charlene heard the call the other day and has stepped up. Anything you'd like to say?
Today is the first day for Charlene. She came at 1:30 in the afternoon to learn how to operate all the equipment. And after teaching her, I said, okay, today start. Today is your first day. Start. And she has been doing fantastic job so far. She comes on every Wednesday early, for a few hours earlier than the class starts, to help me out with the cleaning and other things. Every Wednesday she comes.
Wow. Thank you very much, Charlene. Beautiful service. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hansapriya.
Can I just add, Charlene,
Charlene came through, if many of you don't know, Charlene came through the book distribution. We gave her Bhagavad Gita outside the Walmart.
Way back when, right?
Long back, 2004 or 2005.
As I remember, Charlene, you came to Mahatma's presentation. You brought your two sons, right?
Yeah.
Remember when Mahatma was here a long time ago?
Yeah.
2010.
2010.
When did you get your Bhagavad Gita? 2008, in front of a Walmart. Haribo! Very good. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Maharaj, first there's no interest to hear. And then slowly there's an awakening of desire. And then the same webs that bind us hold us back. I'm always taught, as I came through the process, that I should balance my life. That's the one word I hear from my Shiksha Gurus again and again. Lavanya, you're okay? Is your life balanced? Because without that, you cannot go ahead. When we try to balance our life, especially when we are grihasthas with children, we realize that there's only a certain amount of time that we can contribute, other than the time from sleep that we can take away. So 6 hours of sleep and the rest of the day, we still have only the silent moments that we can actually sit down with the Bhagavatam, focus, and then, you know, dedicate. So there's a slight frustration that I want to do more, but I'm pulled by all the other services, my duties that I must do during the day. Can you clarify to me the combination of balance versus desire?
Well, it's more of a question of connection, and that how what we're doing is connected to Krishna. For instance, Mother Yashoda has a lot to do also. And it's not like you see a lot of pictures of Mother Yashoda sitting down with the Bhagavatam or something like that. But she's always chasing after Krishna because he's so restless. He's running here, there, and everywhere. And it's mentioned how the cowherd women, they had so many duties to do. And one of the beautiful verses of Bhagavatam, as they're churning the butter into yogurt and their bangles are on their wrists and they're moving rhythmically, and then they're singing these beautiful songs to Krishna, and then it goes out into the atmosphere and it purifies the three worlds. This is the music in Vraj. Vraj means it's always moving. There's always somebody doing something. It's not that there's meditation going on, but they're chasing after Krishna one way or the other, or waiting for Krishna to come back from the forest, or tending the cows and so forth. And so really, the kind of life as a mother is more similar to what happens in Vraj than, you know, some yogi sitting somewhere. And then if you can connect that, you know, Prabhupada once told one of the mothers in ISKCON who was saying, well, now I don't have time for this or that. And Prabhupada said, you know, your child is your deity. And if you understand, you know, how that's true and how you're working in that way and you can make that connection, then all the things that you do will be connected. And at the same time, there's ways in which, you know, to assimilate stay close to the vibration. Those things are always still there, no matter what other kinds of things you're doing. I noticed Nirkula, she spends, she always has the Chaitanya Charitamrita or the Chaitanya Bhagavat playing when she's moving around, cooking, doing this and that. And then it's like the vibration's going, you know.
It's more of a, that has to be learned, I think, over time. I feel like we repeated this conversation, but I need to be reminded.
Everybody does. That's why what practice means. It means you have to renew yourself every day. Otherwise, you just hear once and then, okay, I got it. But actually, we hear constantly. And in Vidhi Bhakti, it means you start over as a beginner every day and you start from scratch and now I'm going to do it again. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm murka. I'm a fool before my spiritual master. He didn't assume anything. And when Rupa Sanatan came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their first thing was, I'm a fool, I don't know anything. I'm starting over from scratch. So just start from the beginning every day and you'll be fine.
So one more text, Prabhuji, from Sheila Mataji. She has told that, Hare Krishna, I completely agree. ISV is the best. His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu is the best. And the devotees in ISV are the best. Your lectures keep me inspired to hear and remain enlivened in Krishna consciousness so far away as Singapore.
Hari Bol, Sheila. Yes, she was joining all the calls and everything. I'm so happy to hear from her again. Thank you, Sheila. That was beautiful. Hare Krishna. So now we're going to have time for kirtan, and we'll put away all the asans and the chairs. We'll clear the dance floor. And I see Priya Kishori just walked in with her harmonium slung over her arm. We have Avantika, who's become an accomplished kartalist. Must have been from a last life, because I've never seen anyone progress so quickly as she. So we have a star cast tonight for the kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, Hey! Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman.